What's up, Husker fans? Evan Bland here with Sam McEwen and Jimmy Watkins. It is hot outside, but pretty cool in here. We've got two guys sitting, one guy standing.
It's the only
over
time
here.
In my life I've been taller than you.
You had a wild hair, though. You wanted to stand for the podcast.
Absolutely.
This is groundbreaking, I believe.
Absolutely, I wanted to stand.
Why did you want to stand?
Because I like standing.
You like standing?
Yeah, absolutely. I like it. It's just. I don't like bar stool chairs that much, and that's what we're sitting on. So, like, when I go to a sports bar, somebody will come over to me. Do you want to sit at one of the high tops? No. No, I'll wait for the low.
Wow.
I will. I'll wait for a low top chair. I don't want to sit in a high top chair.
Interesting.
So, you don't eat at the bar, then? No? Or you stand and eat?
If I have to stand and eat at a bar, wow. Sure. But I don't really like the feeling of my legs swinging underneath me like I'm a...
Well, that's why they got the little rails.
Six-year-old kid.
See, I like that because my legs
are long
enough.
Well, there's no rails here, Evan.
My legs are always on the ground. So, like, the opportunity to just kind of hang them off, I like that. Bring back a little bit of
most
childhood.
Of our legs, yes. Yes, most of our legs are... Yes, that's right.
That's good.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be back.
Doing on Thursday.
Two weeks into the... Yeah, it's a little bit later in the week. We've had a little bit of... shuffling going, and actually I thought that would be kind of a, before we get into football, it might be a nice place to start, as all of us have kind of diverted some of our attention this week to other sports. You were at volleyball, right, Sam?
Absolutely.
You got to take in that Creighton-Nebraska match.
Yeah.
Jimmy got to see, or kind of break down Nebraska men's basketball with the schedule, and then I was out at baseball. I thought we could maybe just do kind of a quick around the horn on what we saw from some of those other programs before we get into Nebraska-Buffalo this week.
Sounds good to me. Who wants to start?
I guess it's me. I'm getting the eyes. So Nebraska, well, the Big Ten at large released its conference schedule, which we already knew who everyone was playing. Now we know when everyone is playing. And I don't know. I think analyzing schedules, particularly basketball schedules, is a bit silly to me because there's so much that can happen over the course of a season. And with basketball, football, every game is an event. Basketball, every game is a data point. The individual matchups, like, you know, people are, the rivalries don't mean as much. The individual matchups carry less weight overall. But we are a newspaper. We are a content machine. So you have to feed the beast, right? No favors done on the home and homes. The one team that Nebraska would want to play in a home and home that it got is Northwestern twice. Everything else is pretty tough on that front, although Sam thinks Wisconsin is going to be down this year, so
that's because maybe that's going to be down this year.
Okay, but even a down Wisconsin compared to an up Nebraska, I think we still have some distance to meet in the middle there.
That's like kind of like Evan sitting on a stool and me standing
yeah,
up. Roughly
yeah,
the same
that's good.
Height.
Yeah, that's
I'm Wisconsin
good.
Down. Okay, sure.
That's right.
All right.
The start is brutal, not just because it's Indiana and Michigan, and I think, is Ohio State in there? Yeah, Ohio State's in there relatively early, but it's all that is sandwiched between the Auburn showcase game in Atlanta, the Kansas State game on December 19th, and the NC State game on December 1st, which means that Nebraska will play five straight Power 5 opponents after playing one, however you classify the Big East, they're of that ilk type of team in their first seven games. So it could be a rude awakening. It could be the moment we learn, okay, maybe they're turning the corner. But that first part of the schedule will tell us a lot about Nebraska.
Mm. They have some Friday and Saturday home games, do they not? That's sometimes kind of a tell from the
sprinkled all over the place.
Like those can be some better television properties or television
sure.
opportunities?
Yeah, it's fun to cover a team that plays literally every day of the week. That's not fun. And you never know what time it's going to be. You know, BTN will come out and like 9:30 or 10 in the morning. Like, you never know. You have no idea what they're going to do. And obviously, we'll see what the times are. Having done that for 1 year in basketball, it was easier because it was on Zoom. And so, like, the players and the coaches would literally go from the locker room to the Zoom interview in like 2.5 minutes. So we got our stuff done pretty quickly. If they go back to an in-person style this year, like, you know, you'll have to wait for a while. I don't know if you're going to have to wait the 39 minutes that basketball reporters had to wait for Tim Miles to come to his post-game press conference. But boy, he would take some time. And then he'd come in there and do his little comedy routine for 14 minutes after they lost the game. So... you know, I don't know. You want me to go next?
Go ahead.
All right, volleyball. So I wrote a column about volleyball It's the first time I've ever written a column about volleyball. Now that I'm the sports editor, I care more about all the sports. I've always admired the sport. Let's be clear. I've always admired the way that they play, the speed and talent that's required, the athleticism, the reaction time. It's kind of like a combination of just so many different things, you know, kind of a combination of like tennis and, you know, baseball and football and all these other sports. And so I've loved that. Nebraska's volleyball team swept Creighton on Wednesday night. It was an impressive display of defensive wizardry, be the best way to put it. So the way that Nebraska sets its team up, or can set its team up, is they have a rare situation where they can have three defensive specialists on the floor at the same time in the back row. And if you're able to do that and you have a competent block, which Nebraska kind of does, even if Lawrence Difference isn't playing right now, it makes it really, really hard to score. Like, there's just not a lot of room to put the ball down. And so what happened last night to Creighton, which is a pretty good offensive team, is they were hitting into windows that were constantly covered. Just constantly covered. And that becomes really frustrating and demoralizing after a while when you're swinging and swinging and swinging and swinging and you don't have any success. Nebraska had 69 digs in a three-set match. A, that's rare. It doesn't happen very much. Right. Nebraska averages about 15 digs going into the match per set. So when you do that many times, what that tells you is, A, you're not terminating the ball either. Nebraska's offense still struggling to get the ball down itself, but B, you're kind of impenetrable. And so that was one of those, you don't necessarily see a lot of those in volleyball. Like, Nebraska tends to have this overwhelming, terrific offense that makes it really hard for teams to keep up, because Nebraska can just be a scoring machine. This Nebraska team actually kind of struggles to score. Their freshmen have not gotten on track yet. They're really inconsistent, and they're missing Stiverins. Right, so instead of having Kayla Caffey and Lauren Stiverins as your two middle blockers, it's Kayla Caffey and Callie Schwarzenbach, and you know you're having to use an outside hitter who maybe isn't as good. So their offense hasn't gotten on track, but Cook has adjusted with this defensive lineup. Lexi Rodriguez, who's a freshman libero, as some people say.
People say libero. I've never
heard
that.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to say it.
Libero is both cooler and that's the only way I've ever heard it.
Yeah. Kianale Akana is the defensive specialist. She's not, I wouldn't describe her as a libero. Kenzie Knuckles is a really interesting player. She's a kind of a tweener. She's about 5'10", 5'11", and can do a little bit of everything. And so rare is the volleyball team that's willing to put three players like that out on the court at once. But when you're that good, it's kind of fun to watch. And again, the reason it's interesting is because it's an anomaly. It isn't stuff you see a lot. And so Nebraska's doing it a little bit differently right now, and that's kind of cool.
Do you think, like, the conversation with Nebraska volleyball is always so unique in that it's always about, will this team contend for a national title? How deep will they go? It's not about some of the other stuff. Do you feel like what Wednesday night's sweep was that sort of what they had to do to beat Creighton in this moment? Or do you think this is kind of the start of finding kind of that mix of players and style of play that'll help them make another deep run?
I think you can take this style and make it portable from game to game, but I don't think that they can do what they want to do unless Difference comes back or one of these freshmen really takes off. And by that, the freshmen I'm talking about are Lindsey Krause, Allie Batenhorst, and Whitney Lauenstein, I think is how you say her last name, and all three of them have struggled. I mean, they've had up and downs. Now, you would expect that. This is like saying, you know, this is like a freshman wide receiver. You would expect there to be struggles. But unless one of those players turns into, you know, Michaela Fecky as a freshman, or even Maddie Kubik as a freshman, they're going to need Stiverins back. Now, they get Stiverins back, and this is probably the best team in the country. But it puts a lot of pressure on her, right? Because if she was healthy, she'd be out there. And it's interesting because, again, she's the heart of the team. Last night, they introduced every single player in volleyball. Every single player. Even the ones that don't start. Well, who got the biggest cheer? Lawrence Difference.
Did she? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's not even close. And it's a half Nebraska half Creighton crowd wasn't even close. Creighton fans are, I mean, she's kind of the star of the show. Like, she's the one of the bigger, you know, biggest stars in the sport. And so this is a person who, you know, eventually they want her to come back. And if she comes back, I think they can win the national title. If she doesn't, I think it will be hard. They'd have to play perfect.
Okay. Well, I was out at baseball on Tuesday, and that was the first day of fall ball for those guys. And so they start about a 5-week deal where they're going to scrimmage 3 times a week, which is a little bit different from how they've done it in the past. And they're going to have the red-white series then in mid-October, as they usually do. And so what's interesting about that team to me is it was so peer-driven last year. The four captains they had, Spencer Schwellenbach, Jackson Hallmark, Mojo Hagee, Joe Acker, all led that team. And all those guys are gone. They either went professional or they moved on with their careers. And so what I think is really fascinating is this fall for those guys is not so much about defining roles or diving into analytics. It's about who's that next handful of voices for this team. And we got little hints of who that might be. Cam Chick, who's played some second and some outfield, I think has a chance to be that guy. Kyle Perry almost certainly will be one of those guys. He's a fourth-year pitcher out of Millard South, I believe it was. And, you know, he's clearly the vocal leader of that team now. He obviously really came into his own against Arkansas in the regional last year in the game that they won. So it's a really interesting team. I guess what I'm kind of curious about, like, when you talk about the top teams in college baseball, they're making a regional every year. Whether they make the College World Series or not, you know, that can change. But those are the teams that make the regionals every year. And so that's sort of the challenge for Nebraska now is a lot of their best players, as is the case with most programs, have gone pro. They had 3 players drafted, 4 signed overall. And so how do they take that next step, right? Was that team special, or was that the start of sort of a sustained excellence sort of thing? And I think that's what the challenge is going to be for those guys this fall, is finding out, you know, who are the weekend guys going to be? 2/3 of the rotation they have to sift through. Their entire outfield may be different. So I think that's what it is, more than maybe the talent, because the talent is there. Their incoming class, they brought in 18 players, 15 freshmen, a couple transfers. It's a top 25 class. So they have guys like Drew Christo, the pitcher who everybody knows about.
Yeah, we've talked about him.
Chase Mason, outfielder from South Dakota, who could have been drafted. Nebraska.
For them to be
really
where they want to be, Drew Christo
him.
has to be an ace, right?
Like, I mean, you would think he would be a weekend guy.
Yeah.
You would think. That happens in college baseball every year. Yeah. If you're a top freshman, you're starting on the weekend.
Well, I don't think there's any question. If he doesn't do that, I mean, they're not going to have the kind of staff they want, are they?
Maybe not. I mean, Shea Shaneman's back. He'll be in the weekend.
He was
the Sunday guy. Kyle Perry will be one of those guys, I'm confident in saying.
Well, he's been up and down his whole career.
Well, he was hurt for a lot of it, and he's come into his own. He really has. I think he'll be a weekend guy. And maybe it's Christo. You know, maybe it's Braxton Bragg. Maybe it's this Ornelas kid that they got as a transfer.
He could be helpful.
So they have the arms. They feel like they have 7 or 8 guys that could be those guys. But, again, so they feel like they have enough, incidentally, that they're going to scrimmage 3 times a week, which they couldn't do last year because
sure.
They didn't have enough guys to lengthen that out and have competitive games. So.
And the other thing is they only played 3 games a weekend last year.
That's true.
So that was beneficial. So now you go back to the regular schedule again, and you have to play these midweek games. Nobody really wants to play deep down, but they have to against the Northern Colorados and UNOs and Kansas States. And yes, you're going to win almost all of them. You'd like to win all of them. But every so often, you're not going to win one of them.
Sure.
And it's going to be a pain in the ass, and you're going to have to use 5 pitchers. That kind of stuff, you know, they got to. It's just going to be a different kind of year. They seem to have just enough, the right amount, the excellent amount for 3 games a weekend. And once you get into Big Ten play, that's what it becomes. But prior to that, you have to throw all these other guys out there, and we'll just have to see how it goes.
Well, it's always been their shortcoming in regionals. They can hang for a game or two, but then the pitching falls off a cliff, or it has
right.
in the past. So they feel like that they've addressed that. And the flip side of that coin, I mean, yes, the Big Ten only schedule helped them in that it put their they were able to put their best foot forward every game.
Right.
But they also felt like they lost a year developmentally. Sure. Oftentimes, those are when those guys play. So
we'll see.
See how it goes. Let's go back to football. Our Big Red idea this week, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on this. So Nebraska under Scott Frost has always approached games with this idea that it views the opponent as nameless and faceless, right? We hear that all the time. It's not about whoever they play. It's about themselves. The opponent is nameless and faceless. And I thought, you know, this week, over this next 7 or 8 days, is really going to test that theory, because you're going from Buffalo on one end to Oklahoma on the other end. And I guess I'm curious, do you guys like that approach of the nameless, faceless opponent, or do you think it should be, I don't know, a little more emotional, a little more opponent specific? Because you look at guys like Chris Kolarvik and other FCS opponent or FCS former FCS players who have come on to Nebraska and said, man, we got up for those big games, you know, we had a chip on our shoulder, we had something to prove. Where do you guys come down on maybe the best way to approach games week in and week out?
I mean, should that be the way that they approach every week? Yes. Is that feasible? Is that how human biology works? I think at best you're asking these guys to reject their human nature. At worst, you're kidding yourself and the media, because the difference between coaching someone on how a concept that Buffalo is going to run at and it has shown competency at in the past is just different. The reaction is just different when you're showing them that compared to an Oklahoma concept. Your ears are going to naturally perk up a little bit more when you're talking about Spencer Rattler and other guys who are going to the, you know, Kennedy Brooks guys who are probably going to go to the NFL, opposed to Buffalo, Kyle Van Treese, product of the system around him in the MAC, guy that none of these guys have ever heard of until they turned his film on this week. So do I like the idea behind it? Should Nebraska treat Buffalo like they would treat Oklahoma? Yes, of course. Is that realistic? I don't think so.
Dr. James Watkins, human biology. You could walk into a classroom, I don't know, at some college, you know, and you just walk in, you're like, you're kidding yourself! Anyway. Nebraska's not good enough to treat Buffalo like anything other than a potential loss. They're not good enough. They really can't take a week off in that regard. I think there have been teams at Nebraska and historically that could, where you're like, eh. Like Nick Saban, for example, flipped out on his team Monday after they beat Miami 44-13, and then he went into the press conference and he's going on this extended riff about practice habits and whatever, and they're going to play Mercer. Now, what Nick Saban understands is there's no possible way my team's going to care about Mercer the way that they cared about Miami. He already knows that. And so he's guarding against it by going on some extended rant. They're going to beat Mercer by 63 points, but you know my point. Mm-hmm. Nebraska doesn't have that luxury. If they go into the first quarter against Buffalo and think that's just going to be, you know, a nap and a smoke, they're going to lose. They're not going to win the game. I agree that, like, Oklahoma will get a little bit more, what's the right word, juice from the team. But they don't really have the luxury of taking a week off or thinking, here's a W that we can chalk up to our 44-year bowl streak. They haven't been to a bowl since Scott Frost got here. Each win is like another key that you have to turn to get to the one thing that everybody kind of knows will save his job. And the one thing they haven't done. Most of these guys haven't done it. JoJo, Ben Stille, Markel DeSmuth, they're the only ones who've been to a bowl game. Mm-hmm. And Connor Culp.
Do you know who has been to a bowl game last year and the year before that?
Marquis Stepp.
Buffalo.
Buffalo, that's right.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Buffalo has. You know, so like, they don't have a chance to take it cool. I mean, now we'll see how it turns out Saturday. But I think it's good. Here's what I would say. I think it's good for Nebraska that they're playing Buffalo now and not playing Buffalo after they play Oklahoma. I think it's well timed, because if you played Oklahoma and maybe you played Oklahoma well and you lost, And then you got to go play Buffalo. You know, I don't know that it would go as well. I think playing Buffalo before you play Oklahoma, you know, they're going to have your full attention. You don't get to pay attention to Oklahoma until this game's over. So that's right. What I think.
Yeah, I mean, the nameless, faceless thing, I feel like works better on a team like Buffalo than it does Oklahoma, because why take away your motivation, your extra motivation to prove yourself, the human nature that you're talking about? I mean, Nebraska knows that Oklahoma's on another level right now, so why not use that to your advantage instead of trying to spend some of your, you know, psychological energy convincing yourself that it's just about you? Because it's not. It's about more than whether you make mistakes or don't make mistakes. So
right, they're not good enough to do anything against Oklahoma other than focus on themselves too, though. That's my point. It's like you do get to a point where you salivate and you start talking about intangibles and you start envisioning in your mind, hey, everybody knows this game's going to go to the fourth quarter and then it's going to be about who makes a play. When Nebraska's playing Oklahoma, it's, hey, this game's going to go to the kickoff and we hope that we're not down 21 after one quarter. Like, it's...
Whose voice is that?
Mine.
Okay.
Literally everything that Nebraska does has to be about Nebraska. Until you get to a point where you feel good about being able to replicate week after week after week your approach and your execution, everything has to be about them. It took, and God bless Adrian Martinez for going and getting in the grills of his linemen and apparently his offensive line coach. You read Jimmy's story and it's like, you know, Greg Austin is getting it from Martinez too. That's what it takes. Like, you have to go over there and shake these guys and go, hey guys, play well. Come on. You know, you don't, Fordham doesn't matter who you play. Like, Nebraska's not good enough to do anything but that, but focus on itself. And until they do that, they're in the sense that the opponents are nameless and faceless, in the sense that it really doesn't matter what those teams do. If Nebraska hurts itself and doesn't take care of, like, swinging its leg through a punt, it doesn't really matter what they do. Those opponents are nameless and faceless because Nebraska's biggest opponent is Nebraska.
Yeah. So Nebraska did clean things up against Fordham last week, 52-7. They pull away after about a quarter and a half of nerves.
Right.
You know, we don't need to necessarily rehash a lot about that game. I guess what I'm curious about is, in the days following that game, who did you guys talk to that maybe you haven't talked with before, that you got to know a little bit better as it pertains to moving forward with this season or even into next season? Because a lot of guys, when 88 players played or participated in that game against Fordham, that Monday of the press conference was Labor Day, so a lot of other players came up and talked. And I think we all got a chance to interact with some different guys. I guess I'm curious what your impressions were about some of the people you got to talk with.
Well, that's how I wrote a story about Logan Smothers earlier this week. And the idea is basically that this guy... I did the little fake fist pump when we were talking about Nebraska getting it together against Fordham. It's, you know, it's a golf clap. Congratulations, you were able to mop up an FCS opponent. That's what you're supposed to do. So it's really not even about what Logan Smothers did when he was in the game. It's more about how he carried himself in the huddle, how prepared he was for that moment, how his teammates responded to him. Did he look like a quarterback? Did he feel like a quarterback? And the resounding answer was yes. I mean, he Ethan Piper tried to give him a pep talk before he went in the game. Smothers said, no, I got this.
it's good.
Again, Fordham.
It's good.
But like,
I like it.
No,
I like
it. It's good.
I like it.
Even in a press conference setting.
Quarterbacks need some swag.
Yeah. Even in the press conference setting, he was, you know, batting off questions left and right. Wouldn't tell us why he fumbled. We'd played really well. No details. I asked him about, he was talking about having good feet and how Verduzco classifies good feet as red feet and blue feet. And he said, red feet is bad feet, blue feet is good feet. I was like, okay, what does that mean? He said, well, red is what you're not supposed to do. Blue is what you're supposed to do. Like, okay, we get it. You can You can bat around this question as much as you want. I'm not going to answer it. I'm not going to. I'm sure. But Adrian has a quality about that, about himself that way too, where if you get a little bit too close to actually asking an important question, he'll say, no, thank you. He'll just bat that one away. I asked Adrian. Yeah. I asked Adrian in the press conference, what did you think of how Logan Smothers played? Did you have, I think I asked him, did you have an evaluation? Yeah. He said, I do, but I don't have to tell you. So Smothers, you know, has those same mannerisms. And, you know, he led two touchdown drives, sweet. But this part of it, I think, is the only thing you can really evaluate. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. I'll go. I thought it was interesting talking to Ativa Mauga Clements, who we haven't really spoken with since he's been on campus. He was the junior college transfer from California. And it was fun on Monday because there were so many players that came up. I think 15 or so popped up to the sixth floor press box there. And he was off way down the hall while some of the other maybe heavier hitters were talking. And so it was just a handful of folks over there chatting with him. And he was real boisterous guy, real just excitable. You could tell even just in talking with him for 5 or 10 minutes, he kind of had that nervous energy where he was just ready to go out and run around right then. And, you know, for him, that was a chance to get on the field and the chance to realize maybe a payoff from all the hard work. And he arrived during the COVID year. And
that was
difficult.
Made a couple plays.
Yeah, he made a couple plays. And, you know, he's openly said, like, I'd love to work for a black shirt next year when that linebacker room changes at the inside spot. He feels like he can have a bigger...
I didn't know it was going to change.
Well, he feels like it's going to change.
Good for him.
He feels like he's going to make a play.
Same guys are coming back.
I know. So, yeah. Nobody's leaving, but you know, he might be in the mix more next year.
He might.
It's a nameless, faceless depth chart, okay?
There you go. So, guys, I just enjoy talking with guys like that because, you know, God bless Ben Stille and Austin Allen and some of the luminaries of the program. But it's just nice to hear a kind of a different perspective from guys who, you know, have been grinding behind the scenes. So that was one that stood out for me.
Daniel Cherney, the punter from Australia, he was great. He's living in, you know, you can tell he's enjoying life. You know, I think he grew up an Australian rules football player. I think he planned on going pro in that. He was at a position. He was moved out of that position. The position that he was in is a combination of, like, quarterback and safety in American football. Because in Australian rules football, they do everything, right? And so it was kind of that role, or quarterback and middle linebacker, most important position on the field. He got moved away from there. And the guy that they put in the middle is basically built like that, like Daniel is, 6'4", 225, big guy. They took him out of there. I think he kind of lost his love for the sport. Fell out of whatever with his club team, and then found American football. And I think he's still growing as a player. I think that's pretty obvious that athletically he's kind of off the charts for a punter. Like, athletically he's really good, but the craft of punting is still an art form that, you know, he's working to master. And when he masters that, I think he could be a pretty good player. So he's going to be at Nebraska for a while. You know, we'll see how it goes. I think he's kind of got a year to prove it and see how good he is. And then I think you reevaluate the first two games, C+. I don't know. First game wasn't good. Second game was pretty good. So, you know, I think you reevaluate that at the end of the year, because a guy like that's not going to walk on. And those aren't typically walk-on players. Those are usually scholarship guys. They're coming from Australia. They're, you know, they're coming across the ocean. Got to give him a scholarship. So I'll be curious to see how it goes from here. We'll see how it goes. But he's a really nice guy, and you know, you appreciate who he is as a person.
I know we're talking about very, very simple things in the punt game, like swinging your leg through the ball, but you'd mentioned the athleticism there. It sounds like there's some fake punt potential.
Yeah, there could be. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, he can run. I mean, you can tell he kind of likes the idea of almost being something more than a punter.
Oh, yeah. He wants to learn about the game, all the different positions.
Yeah. So there's a desire there to be something more than the punter.
Yeah, didn't he catch a stinger trying to make a tackle or something?
Well, he got really hurt.
Yeah.
And he says it wasn't a tackle. He said someone came across his leg. I don't know if he was in traffic or what, but I think in practice they tell him, now you can't. Just go away.
Okay.
Stay away from everything and don't get hit. I think he was trying to probably do something that most punters don't try to do. So he's a neat story. It's because he's clearly a guy who doesn't just love what he's doing, but would love to do even more.
What do you guys feel like? You know, we talked a week ago about that perception reality and how this team has been different than maybe what we envisioned it to be. Where are you guys after 2 weeks of seeing Nebraska play? Like, do you feel like you have a sense of what this team is, or do you feel like, man, there's still a lot out there to kind of met through and figure out what the strengths and weaknesses of this team can be?
Are we doing, is this one thing we know, one thing we don't, or
yeah.
Is this okay?
Let's get into
okay.
that.
Okay. I think we're still shrugging on a lot of things. One thing we know, special teams is still something that needs to be cleaned up. This is two straight weeks where
yep.
Cam Taylor-Britt has been back there and made a pretty egregious return mistake.
I like the one thing being a negative.
Yeah.
It's accurate.
Yeah.
In this case, it's accurate.
That's what we know. And I mean, yeah. I got to say, this second one with Cam Taylor-Britt, that was a wicked hop. And
sure.
Like, I know that they were saying he shouldn't have been trying to field it. You could argue he wasn't even trying to field it. It just popped up on him. It popped on him so quick. He was standing further back from the ball. So, I don't know. I'm giving Cam more leeway on that one than I am on the first one. But to have two like that, and they're still saying we're going to keep sending him back there, we'll see how much that remains the plan. But I think at a certain point, why not just let Cam Taylor-Britt worry about what Cam Taylor-Britt is really good at, which is playing cornerback. I'm sure he's a dynamic punt returner. It's just that the two dynamic plays that I've seen him make so far have been negative.
Yeah, so time and moment, Jimmy. I mean, you're up 24-7. You're about to get the ball back and put your foot on their throat. There's not 93 seconds left in the first half. You don't go anywhere near the ball.
Fair point.
You don't go anywhere near it.
Fair point. And the
fact that he doesn't know that is not on him. I think they know he's a playmaker, and he's trying to go do stuff that is not necessary, and they keep putting him out there, and they either will stop or they won't. I mean, that's a punt that you absolutely stay away from. Scott Frost is actually pretty kind sometimes to his players. I credit Scott for his grace there, because that, to me, that would not have been a... And you saw Taylor-Britt and Scott got in a yelling match on the sidelines.
Well, the TV caught that, yeah.
That's... I mean, if I'm a head coach in that moment, are you kidding me? This is a moment when you're going to get mad at me? Come on. So I think Scott stands up for his players pretty darn well, and I think he's been really, really kind on that play, because I couldn't believe it.
Particularly after that exchange, that's a good point that you made. Okay, so one thing we know, special teams. One thing we don't know, gestures around everything else. The run defense, okay, I won't steal, but like maybe we know something about the defense. But offensively, Fordham, what are you supposed to do with that sample size? Like, okay, you outclassed an opponent you were supposed to outclass. Great. The first game, nothing went as you planned. So they are telling us basically that's not a great perception of who they are. That's not how they wanted their offense to look. So I would say, I think they still want to be a power run team. They were able to do that against Fordham when the game script followed suit. We need more data points overall. So offense in general, honestly, Martinez is still, even last week, which was a pretty decent week for him, I was watching back on the touchdown run that he had to the left. He had Wyatt Lever on a cross and didn't throw it. So there's just a lot to sort out there.
Sure. I'll give a positive spin on special teams for something that we know. They have a kickoff guy in Brendan Frankie and Kellen Meyer. The stat that jumps right at you, 13 touchbacks and 15 kickoffs. They had 12 out of 40 last year.
Yep.
So you think about those back-breaking kickoff returns for touchdowns that Nebraska's given up against Iowa and Wisconsin the last year or two, you would think that those would go away. And so finally, at long last, Nebraska appears to have actually a couple options for someone who can kick the ball through the end zone, given some of the other uncertainty within that unit. I think that's notable that they can count on that. And maybe if Nebraska wins a coin toss at some point, we'll see if they're confident enough to defer, which would be pretty interesting.
This will be the weekend
that they're going to win.
That's your bold take. Nebraska wins the coin toss.
Bold take.
We win the toss. We are going to defer. And I'll, you know, for my unknown too, I'll go with the offense and the running game too, where, you know, we don't know kind of where they're going to come down all this offseason talk about being a downhill running team. They obviously abandoned that in the second half against Illinois when they didn't necessarily have to do that. And it's not just the want to, it's the offensive line still sort of coming together with some younger guys. The running back pecking order remains unclear. Maybe Marquise Stepp passed Gabe Irvin last week in terms of that guy that they feel like he can do it between the tackles.
Two games, two sideline huddles about, oh, they're not in the alignment that we thought they were going to be in.
That, you know, Martinez and his ability to fire up those guys. You know, I just think there's a lot up in the air still about, can Nebraska have any kind of an offensive identity and can it be in the run game? I don't know. The first game wasn't encouraging in that sense. The second game really didn't tell us much because they cruised most of the way.
I had somebody call me a couple weeks ago and say, why don't they just sneak the ball up the middle against Illinois? The middle was wide open. Why didn't he just take the snap and sneak it? That's an interesting offense to try. It might have worked. You never know.
Would have worked in Madden. Those video games, you could sneak for like 3 or 4 yards on every carry.
That's right. Those are the worst guys to play. You ever play those guys where they took up the whole quarter with their drive?
Sure.
And it was usually in Bill Walsh college football, but like they just took up the whole quarter with the drive. They scored. You scored in about 13 seconds, and then they took the whole quarter.
Yep.
By the way, I think that's who Nebraska wants to be.
Well, they wouldn't mind scoring fast.
A version of it.
They wouldn't mind scoring fast. No one cares. No one's ever going to kick scoring fast out of the bed.
Sure.
But granted, there are ways of scoring fast where you're trying to, and there's ways of where, like, well, I guess no one decided to tackle Jonathan Taylor, so he just had to run 87 yards. Okay, so what's the one thing I feel pretty good about? One thing that I know. I know Nebraska's defensive scheme is pretty sound. I've liked, you know, I've watched both games again a couple of times. There are things about Nebraska's defense that are imperfect because of the personnel that's on the field. But you can see the game plan, you can see the vision, and the thing that I like about watching one of their games is when something goes wrong, I know why.
Hmm.
When something goes wrong, and some team pops a big play against the Husker defense, I know why. I can see it. Oh, that guy went there. Oh, Cam got kind of trapped inside. Oh, Garrett Nelson got turned, and he can't get turned there. And, you know, he wasn't trying to get turned. He wasn't Alex Davis standing perpendicular to the line of scrimmage. Don't know why you're doing it. Like, when I watch it, I know why. And to be very honest with you, this is going to really freak people out. When I watched Bob Diaco's defenses, I knew why. Like, Diaco's defenses sucked at Nebraska, but I knew what they were trying to accomplish. For a couple years there, I wasn't always sure. Banker's defenses, I wasn't always sure. There were weird switches in coverage, all kinds of stuff. So, like, I feel pretty good about when I watch Nebraska's defense. Okay, they're trying to eliminate this. They're trying to take this away. They've got good enough safeties to where they don't get bombed out on big throws. They're keeping their safeties back. Sometimes they have one high safety, and it's Deontay, and he gets on his horse and all this other stuff. So that much I know. Is that Nebraska's defense will have hard games this season, I'm sure. But unlike the first year, where I was like, I really don't know what they're trying to do there because the guys weren't executing it, you can see it.
Hmm.
The one thing I don't know is whether Nebraska has any home run hitters at skill players. And, you know, I know they've hit some big passes with Oliver Martin and Samari Toure. Some of that stuff's just schematic. I mean, Samari Toure is in a zone, and he's in the middle of the zone. And you could put 6'3" player A in the middle of the zone, and he catch the football. Oliver Martin did make two nice plays on a deep ball,
mm-hmm.
But I think I'm speaking more of the running back position. If you give somebody a nice hole and they get to the second level, can they make somebody miss, and can they pull away from anybody if they do? And sooner or later, you would love to have a play every game where at the end of this game, you look at the stat sheet and say 64-yard run, touchdown, or 73-yard pass, touchdown. And if you go back, Evan, and look at the teams that you covered, even before, just in the few years you've been there. So you started with us in 2016?
17.
So I'll go back a few years. You could look at the stat sheet and you would see Jordan Westerkamp, 64-yard touchdown pass, Tommy Armstrong. Or you would see Terrell Newby, 65-yard touchdown run. Or you would see Stanley Morgan, 71-yard touchdown pass from Tommy Armstrong in Indiana. They had guys that once a game could hit a three-run homer.
Mm-hmm.
And you need, and Scott Frost's offense dearly needs that. Because there are moments where you're like, oh, there's some, they hit something. They had the play call. The play call was good. The defense that was called against the play call was good. And it should pop for 50, and it pops for 12.
Hmm.
So that skill player piece, that's still a jury's out for me because I don't see those guys that can just make huge plays once they get to the second level.
And that's been the case really since 2017, I would say.
Stanley had his 2018, moments. And Ozigbo had the 60-yard run.
He had his moments.
Mo Washington had that.
Yeah, Mo did, I suppose.
He did. I mean, we got to give Mo credit.
He did.
75-yard touchdown at Colorado. That game's going way in the wrong direction, and all of a sudden Mo does something.
Right.
They haven't had it since he left. That's the problem, is that when Washington was removed from the team, whatever you want to call that, disappeared for a week or two, they haven't had the guy that's come back and been able to do that.
Yeah.
The closest thing they got to it, we joke about when we were joking preseason, who might be the bell cow back? It's the same thing with this. Who's the home run hitter? It's the quarterback. It's Adrian Martinez scrambling out, and not that he made a fantastic play against Illinois to run for 75-yard touchdown, but he's the guy.
He's the guy that had to do it, Jimmy. That's a great point. He is the player who did that. The problem is that you can take that away, and you can find a way to take a quarterback away. You can't always take away a running back if he makes a guy miss in the open field, and we just haven't seen it yet.
Before we get to picks, give me one key for Nebraska to beat Buffalo, or if you think they will, and maybe a score or range that you think this thing might finish in.
Both these teams want to run the ball a lot and keep doing that. I think the key is pretty simple. Block better than Buffalo blocks. Run the ball better than Buffalo runs the ball. Put them in disadvantageous situation. Make Kyle Van Treese have to make plays outside of the friendly confines of when Buffalo wants him to make plays. They like to throw deep off of play action. They like to move the pocket for him. They have designed their offense to be very quarterback friendly. It's much harder to be in a quarterback friendly environment if you are in a disadvantageous situation, if you're down 10-14 in the second half. So start fast, run the ball, block well, run the ball well, stop Buffalo from running the ball early. If they get ahead early, I think it's going to be not, I don't think this is going to be a pretty win or a show me win, but I think they can cruise a little bit if they can get off to a good start.
Yeah, I kind of come down in the 24-13 range. I think Nebraska can do it, and really, you know, the key for them, I think, is the same as it usually is. Stop the run, run the ball, and avoid the stupid mistakes, whether that's the penalties, the giveaways, whatever it might be. And then you throw in the fact that it's mid-90s temperatures forecasted for Saturday. It's going to feel well over 100 on the field. You would think that Nebraska's depth could win the day there and they could start wearing down their opponent in the second half. I don't know if it'll play out that way, but I think it's kind of their conventional path to winning this thing.
28-24 Nebraska. I think it'll be a tight game. Would love to be wrong. Would love to be able to look forward to Oklahoma by the third quarter. Maybe that'll be the case. I think it's going to be a tough one. I think Buffalo's defensive line will win early. It's small and agile. I think Buffalo's offensive line comes off the ball pretty well, and Nebraska will have to adjust to that. I do think that Buffalo's defense will take some chances, and when they take chances, Nebraska needs to hit jackpot. You know, and there's going to be moments where you're like, man, they're just not running the ball today, are they? And those are the moments where Nebraska's got to be able to hit a throw. So we'll see. I'm not as optimistic as you guys. I think it's going to be a tough game. I don't know that Nebraska can just go downhill on a team and dominate them. Maybe I'm wrong. Want to be wrong. Maybe I will be wrong. I guess we'll find out. Nebraska's a 13.5-14 point favorite, so it's not like it's expected to be down to the wire, but it might be.
How'd those picks shape up in week one?
How'd the picks shape up? Jimmy went 9-3. Evan went 9-3. I went 7-5. You wanna know where I went wrong? I'll tell you where.
Where'd you go wrong?
So Boise? We both all would have ended up 8-4 if Boise would have held on to a 21-0 lead against UCF.
He says without a trace of bitterness.
Okay. The United States Air Force Academy at Navy.
I'm going Air Force.
I'm going Air Force.
Can't go against the Air Force. My brother and his wife were in it. My grandpa was in the Navy, though.
Was he? Cool.
The Johnny Majors Bowl, Pittsburgh, Tennessee. Jimmy, do you know who Johnny Majors is?
What?
Do you know who Johnny Majors is?
No.
Okay. Do you, Evan?
Not really, no.
Ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, they do not know who Johnny Majors is. Johnny Majors won a national championship as a coach in 1976 at Pittsburgh. He took a job at Tennessee after that in the 1980s. Won the famous Sugar Bowl game against Miami. Had one of the best teams in the country, I think, in 86 or 87 at Tennessee. Then he went back to Pittsburgh after that. So hence, the Pittsburgh-Tennessee Johnny Majors Bowl.
I like it.
He was a pretty well-known coach in the late 70s and 80s.
Tad before my time there, but I appreciate the knowledge.
Johnny Majors Bowl. Pittsburgh at Tennessee.
Tennessee. Give me Tennessee.
Tennessee. Great song.
Fun fact, prior to last week's game, Pittsburgh was the last college football team I had watched in person. Playing my Ohio Bobcats at Heinz Field a couple years ago. I'll take Pittsburgh.
Pitt.
All right.
It's also sort of the Steve Peterson Bowl, because Steve Peterson worked briefly at Tennessee, and also obviously was the AD at Pittsburgh.
Steve Peterson Bowl. Love it.
I don't know if Mark Bame fits in there either. I don't know if he worked at Tennessee. Rutgers at Syracuse. Rutgers rolled over Temple last week, and Syracuse beat your Ohio Bobcats 28-9. That was a pretty good win for Syracuse, actually.
It was.
This game is in the Dome. I don't know if they call it the Carrier Dome anymore, but it is in the Dome. It's Rutgers, Syracuse.
I got Rutgers.
Team Shiano.
Greg Schiano. Rutgers. Texas A&M at Colorado. Folsom Field is a snake pit.
I'm not sure we're going to have too many differences if we go down this list here. I mean,
I'm just telling you, Folsom Field is a snake pit.
Okay.
They've lost, for whatever reason, Colorado has a lot of success beating teams there. It must be the altitude. I don't know.
Could be.
Remember when we asked Scott Frost about the altitude in 2019?
I do.
Yeah.
Whatever. Matter. Yeah.
And lost 17-0 lead. remember when we asked later that year about the cold at Minnesota?
Yeah. The no hoodies. Yeah, that was always fun.
And they lost there.
Give me A&M. Probably handily.
A&M.
Yeah.
Give me
A&M as well.
A&M. A&M for me as well. California at TCU.
TCU.
TC who?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
TCU.
Horned Frogs.
Okay. I'll take TCU as well.
Look at us.
Appy State at Miami. Appalachian State at Miami. Miami got housed last week. Appalachian State would have gotten housed against Alabama. However, what do we think?
Miami.
I can't say that getting blown out by Alabama means they lose to Appalachian State. Give me the Canes.
I guess I'm going with Zaxby's.
Wow.
Happy State. The Holy War. Utah, BYU. Late night fun.
This game's always so tricky. I'll go Utah.
It's at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, by the way.
I'm going BYU.
Okay.
Any reason?
I just liked how they looked in the first week, I think, a little bit. It should be a close game. These rivalry games, you can throw a lot of that stuff out the window anyway. I'll take BYU.
I'm going to go with Utah. I think Utah's pretty good. And I think BYU's good, too. I think it'll be a field goal game. Washington at Michigan. Boy, Washington struggled in week one.
This game lost a lot of juice.
Can you imagine how just the storylines coming out of this game if Michigan loses to Washington after Washington lost to Montana?
Yeah.
It would be...
Wouldn't be good.
Whew, tire fire. Michigan.
Same. Maybe that's reacting too strongly to week one, but Wolverines.
Michigan!
That's your Brady Hoke, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Oregon and Ohio State.
I didn't think Ohio State looked like world beaters last week, but Oregon has a situation at quarterback that it needs to
figure out. You didn't think Ohio State looked good last week?
Compared to their standards, you know, like, did you love what you saw from CJ Stroud? Did you?
Yeah, I like what their offense looked really good.
Okay, that's not what I asked you. Did you like what you saw from CJ Stroud?
Oh, yeah. Their offense is fine.
Their offense is fine when they're
kicking offense.
That's fine. No, sure. But against Minnesota, great. Minnesota's defense is not very good. And I know Ohio State's going to look great a lot of times because they have a great infrastructure. They have a great offensive line.
Trevion Henderson.
Great skill players all over the field.
And they have the other guy. The little tank. Yes. What was his name? Mayan Williams?
Mayan Williams. Oh, man. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Three-star guy who got a start there. That's a good story. But I don't know.
All right, so who are you taking?
Hold on. I want to belabor this a little bit longer.
Okay.
They did not look like Justin Fields, Ohio State, or close to it, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, they looked like that on offense. Did Justin Fields play defense last year?
I don't know. I think they looked about the same on defense, and the downgrade at quarterback matters to me. So, that being said, Oregon doesn't really know what it's doing at quarterback whatsoever. So, Ohio State.
Anthony Brown is Oregon's quarterback. Yeah. So, my take on Ohio State is they don't have a good enough defensive coordinator, and it's going to hurt them when they have to play Alabama. But otherwise, I think they're going to win out.
Yeah, I'll take Ohio State. They have enough talent that not even Master Teague can see the field at running back right now.
What about Master
That's
Teague?
That's how deep they are.
Master Teague is four string. That's what's about Master Teague.
Wow.
Iowa. That's an inside joke, Jimmy, that we're going to keep going for as long as we cover this together.
Yeah.
He'll be in the NFL next year, and we'll be like,
be good.
What's Master Teague doing?
There he is.
What about him?
He's going to make someone's roster.
Iowa at Iowa State. All right, so this is a huge game, Cy-Hawk rivalry. Mm-hmm. Biggest game in the rivalry's history. Very cool moment, you know, for Ames. And fascinating. You know, sort of the have is Iowa, has always been the have in this rivalry. The have-not's always been Iowa State. And that's only exacerbated by the fact that now Iowa's all comfy and safe in the Big Ten, and Iowa State's in this wild, renegade Big 12 that doesn't know what it's going to do, and is going to add BYU and Houston and Florida.
Might subtract Mac Campbell.
Yeah. I mean, this is a tough moment for Iowa State. So, you know, this is the best team they've ever had. Probably the last chance they're going to have to play in a real Big 12, all the rest. Who do you think? Iowa, Iowa State.
I like Iowa. I think Brock Purdy I'm always nervous about that guy.
All right. Well, they didn't play very well against Northern Iowa. But Northern Iowa has a weird amount of success against Iowa and Iowa State. They always have.
I'm gonna go Iowa State. I mean, I was surprised to learn that Matt Campbell had not beaten the Hawkeyes yet.
Yeah,
that surprised me. But I'm gonna do my best not to overreact to week one. I mean, the Northern Iowa thing, like you said, they always play them close. Indiana, you know, the way they lost to Iowa, maybe the Hoosiers aren't what everybody thought they were coming in. I'm gonna do my best not to overreact. I think the Cyclones have been the better team. They have the better offense. I think they're gonna pull it out.
I think Iowa State, and I think it'll be a great game, and I think they're going to pull it off, and they're going to rush the field and all the rest, and I want that for them. I think that's more my heart talking a little bit, but it would be good because that league and that particular program hasn't been treated very well by the Big 12, so Iowa State. Well, there's some differences, you know. There's some differences in these picks. We'll see. That Appy State one is a flex one. Could go either way. I get that one. Neither one of you get that one. All of a sudden, I'm right back in the
house. Oh, I got a couple of those myself, so we'll see how it plays.
Oh, that one pretty chalky. Oh,
BYU.
BYU.
And Tennessee.
The coin flip game.
Well, fine.
See, I'll tell you what it is it's a uniform game.
Yeah.
That's a great uniform game. Great helmet game.
And Rocky Top is, in my opinion, the best fight song out there.
Ooh.
I love
the
Rocky Top fight song.
It's top five, no question. I'll put Michigan at the top. I don't like Michigan's football program very much, but that Hail to the Victor is a
pretty
good song.
Good.
I like Fight On.
Okay. That's good too.
Yeah.
Yes, those are all quite good. We'll have to have a top five fight songs.
We've got three right there.
Yeah.
I'd kind of spoiling the content.
I'd put Texas and Notre Dame in there too, but just for their songs. Texas is catchy.
Notre Dame kind of has two. So they have the dun 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 dun, but then right after they score the touchdown, it's that other little thing. And I like them both. Dun 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 dun. Yeah, whatever that is.
Right.
They have two. Nebraska kind of has two.
They do.
Hail Varsity, and then they have There Is No Place Like Nebraska.
Yep, exactly.
I like that There Is No Place Like Nebraska the more between the two of them.
Can I get a take from you guys on high schools biting the style of those, like not having their own fight song, just picking a college fight song?
Right.
As often is the case.
My high school has Iowa State's fight song. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Shouldn't there, like... I don't know, the band alumni, can't we come up with an original fight song, though?
I went to Lincoln Southeast. They paid to have their own created, like, all back right. in the day. They have their own unique fight song,
I like
and it's
that.
Actually very catchy. What's the team? It's a slight, it has a lot of similarities to, I think, Central Tennessee State, whatever it is.
Okay.
Well, very recognizable.
Middle Tennessee State?
Middle Tennessee State, that's what it is. And so
real
it's
tomato ketchup.
It's similar to that, but a little bit. It's its own unique thing.
And I wish there was a Central Tennessee, and I wish they played Middle Tennessee.
Lincoln High is almost a clone of Nebraska.
Right. I figured one of them was.
Yeah. Lincoln High, very similar. So
I should pull up the Miller North fight song. I assume it's still dun 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 dun. And they used to print the words on this cool silver cup. You know, one of those big cups. And then mm-hmm. on it. I used to have that thing until like 5 years ago.
It's catchy stuff.
It
you
is.
You get some big brass going, you get the trombone, you know, all that good
were
stuff.
Were you, first of all, do that again. Okay. Did you play in the band? I don't even know.
I did. Yeah, I played a baritone, which sounds like a trombone, but looks like a trumpet.
Okay.
So it was a
bass.
But
it's not functionally, yeah, so you don't do that.
No, you play it like a trumpet, but it's just bigger. It was great.
I played a trombone for about 9 seconds in fourth grade for Mr. Grimes at Gates Elementary in Grand Island.
Fourth grade? Wow.
Fourth grade.
That's early.
Maybe it was fifth grade. No, it was fifth grade.
Okay,
so
there you
Mr.
go.
Grimes, fifth grade, Gates Elementary in Grand Island, Nebraska. And the first song that we had to play was?
Hot Cross Buns?
That was the second song. Rocky Top.
Oh, wow.
And the look that he had on his face... when I did that trombone, was a very gentle but pained look of, son, don't ever play this instrument again. Now, he didn't say that. He was like, oh, that was good. But the look was, what are you doing? That didn't sound anything like anything. It sounded like a dead animal or an animal that was about to be dead. That was the entire extent of my musical playing career. Was about 4 or 5 weeks, and then going home and practicing, and my mom going, you have to stop doing that, because it was so bad.
Mm.
And playing the trombone, which is what I played, I wasn't any good at that either.
Hmm. What if?
No, there's no what if there.
Top five next week.
I was pretty good at playing the triangle. You know, I could do that. Ding! You know that?
There you go.
And I could dip my knees when I did. I just had a rhythm. To it, I could even kind of go inside the triangle like it was a dinner bell. You know.
Top sure. five marching band origin stories next
you
week.
Were you in the band too?
No. I actually my mom threatened me that she would make me join band if I didn't try to do something else musically. So I've ended up taking guitar lessons for like 2 years. Became disinterested. I don't know. I filled my quota. I practiced not enough. Became disinterested, and eventually just wore her down. Didn't have to join the band.
But did you have to do something else?
She just wanted to get my like dip my toe in there and like have some sort of like
sure.
musical touch to me. So I guess it worked. I don't know. I think that guitar has been given away to a jazz band, high school jazz band since then. So
there's always a jazz band, isn't there?
No.
Sure. What are you in, jazz band? What are you playing? Oh, you know, lots of Coltrane. No, you're not. You're playing like...
They're playing Mustang Sally. They're playing all the chords.
That's right.
You know.
They're playing all the chords that the kids who actually want to play guitar are told, you don't have to worry about that. That's just for jazz.
That's right. Like, the whole thing with the jazz... Everything's jazz now. Like, what is that, Miles Davis Sketches of Spain? No, it's, it's Mustang Sally. Here We Go Now. That's right. Not jazz. That's just a song that has pep.
It's just groovy. Yeah.
Groovy.
Yeah, groovy. Jazz is
the
groovy.
Jazz band. You mean it's just a pep band? And you decided to put the word jazz in there so that it sounded sort of sophisticated? All right.
All right, Sam's been standing for about an hour here, so we're gonna let him sit down. Thanks for listening. Stay hydrated this weekend if you're going to the game. It's going to be a really hot one out there. And we'll see how it goes, and then on to Oklahoma. Thanks for watching.
See ya.